The next topic was the use of chemotherapy in metastatic disease, as commented on by Dr. Dan Petrylak.
What is our current standard of care? Well, two randomized trials that were published in 2004 established docetaxel-based therapy as the standard of care for hormone-refractory prostate cancer. A combination of docetaxel plus estramustine and SWOG was compared to mitoxantrone and prednisone, and Mario's study looked at either weekly or every three-week docetaxel and compared that to mitoxantrone and prednisone. These are very, very similar groups of patients, similar percentages of patients having symptomatic bone pain, similar percentages of patients having exclusively bony metastatic disease or soft tissue disease. And I think, again, it's also quite remarkable that the consistency of the data as far as survival is concerned, our study in SWOG showing a two-month difference and a 20% reduction in the rate of death, and Mario's study demonstrating a 24% reduction in the risk of death and a two-month difference in median survival. But I think what's also important are the issues about quality of life and quality of life improvements seen in TAX 327. In those patients who are treated with docetaxel every 3 weeks versus mitoxantrone or the weekly versus mitoxantrone, using the FACT-P score, there was also an improvement in quality of life parameters in favor of both of the arms, even though the weekly did not show a survival benefit. We're just about to publish our data from SWOG on 9916 in the JCO, and basically we found, except for nausea, there were similar quality of life improvements in docetaxel, estramustine versus mitoxantrone and prednisone. So this does seem to be a comparable regimen as far as our quality of life is concerned. Well, what about the future? Where are the cooperative groups moving forward? Where are some of the other pharmaceutical companies moving forward as far as combinations are concerned? I think the most exciting areas for combination therapy are in the endothelins. SWOG is pursuing this particular pathway, angiogenesis pathways, as well as high-dose calcitriol or vitamin D. Atrasentan is an orally bioavailable endothelin A antagonist. This has been evaluated in a variety of clinical trials, actually three, in asymptomatic men with hormone-refractory prostate cancer. And although the FDA did not accept the data for approval, there did seem to be a trend towards improved disease progression as well as a delay in symptomatic disease progression with atrasentan. Based upon phase one data as well as preclinical laboratory data, the Southwest Oncology Group is pursuing this target in hormone refractory prostate cancer, a trial comparing docetaxel prednisone plus placebo versus docetaxel prednisone and atrasentan should open within the next several months. Primary endpoints of this study are progression-free survival as well as overall survival. It's designed to detect a 33% increase in progression-free survival and a 30% increase in median survival. CLGB is pursuing a different pathway as far as improving upon docetaxel is concerned. Joel Pikus, in a preliminary observation, found that there was a 23-month median survival with docetaxel, estramustine, and bevacizumab. Because of toxicity reasons, the estramustine has been dropped from the experimental arm, but this is going to be compared to the docetaxel and prednisone backbone. The design of this trial, again, is survival as the primary endpoint, and it's looking for a hazard ratio of 1.26 and a five-month improvement in median survival in this study. So in conclusion, docetaxel combined with prednisone is the standard of care for hormone-refractory prostate cancer. We are evaluating new combinations of docetaxel in phase two and phase three studies, and the question of second-line therapy still is open at this point.
Dr. Eisenberger began the discussion following Dr. Petrylak's comments.
I would like to comment on TAX 327. It's very interesting. A little less than 50% of patients had major pain relief. The interesting thing is those patients who have a decreased quality of life in the beginning of the trial, many of them had an improved quality of life, both on every 3 weeks and on a weekly schedule compared to the mitoxantrone and prednisone. But the most fascinating part of all of this is when we looked at the most powerful endpoint that correlated with survival. It was not PSA decline, it was actually pain relief. And improvement in pain was as strong as associated endpoint with survival.
Paul? We continue to administer the androgen deprivation, so see the patients every 3 months. And I will say that my impression is they are getting better with very minimal side effects and toxicity. So in the big world of chemotherapy, it seems to be tolerated remarkably well.
Lynn, what's your impression in terms of how urologists view chemotherapy and prostate cancer? I wonder whether there are a lot of people out there who figure that it causes more harm than good.
Again, I think a lot of this is locally determined by your local, the attitude of your local medical oncologist. And again, I had mentioned before, at our place, they are big believers in second line and third line hormonal therapy before they commit someone to chemotherapy. I know in our local community, there are people, if you send a patient with hormone refractory prostate cancer to a medical oncologist, they go right to chemotherapy. So I think it's a philosophy of what your local relationship is with the medical oncologist, and I don't think it's uniform.
Tom?
It depends on where your patient is. I do not a fair number, but I got 5 or 6 patients that I have to change the stents on regularly. And they have received chemo, and it is remarkable to me how much better the patients seem after getting a course of Taxotere. I was struck by it. I also think that there's a lot of people in the community who still live by the old paradigm that chemo is the last resort and that it can't be given until you've tried everything else. And I don't think that holds true anymore. And I think we need to bring medical oncologists earlier and earlier into the treatment of prostate cancer. It's a multimodality approach now. And I think there's been a major move to bring them in earlier, especially as a result of some of the changes that have gone on with reimbursement with hormonal therapy. A lot of that challenge has gone away. And I think we're going to see them earlier and earlier into this disease, hopefully so anyway.
Well, let's just acknowledge the fact patients fear chemotherapy more than anything, because chemotherapy is traditionally associated with an end-of-life event.
Yes, absolutely.
So that's something we have to remember. Well, even though we now know it's not true, that's the way patients view it.
Mike?
Just a question for Dan. Is the bone pan recognized to be much improved with adding the prednisone to?
Well, it's an interesting question because you do see a difference in the bone pain response rates between 9916 and Mario's study. It's superior in the docetaxel prednisone to mitoxantrone and prednisone, but it's the same in the SWOG study compared to mitoxantrone and prednisone. So I wonder if we had prednisone in our regimen, whether there would have been a higher rate of pain improvement. But it's certainly, you know, an independent factor aside from the prednisone.
The final commentary was provided by Dr. Craig Zipp, who reviewed potential bone complications of long-term androgen deprivation.
We learned a lot about this from the breast cancer literature and the treatments and estrogen deprivation and the osteoporosis that we cause women. So in a way, we're doing what Dr. Crawford mentioned a little earlier, how we'd been so far behind in the breast cancer literature. We are extracting a little bit of their paradigm. And at least in our field, orchiectomy, surgical gonad ablation, as I'll show you, is a big inducer of this. Hormonal modifying agents, as we talked today, androgen deprivation therapy, and at least in breast, aromatase inhibitor therapy. And all these issues that we have, I'll show you, lead to decreased bone strength, and I'll put in quotations, increased risk of fracture. That's probably where the literature falls short a little bit in really documenting what a true fracture is, separating pathologic from the osteoporotic fractures. Well, there's just a little bit to know about the bone loss. One of the things is that when you do these densitometry measurements, you can do them two ways. You can do them by X-ray, which is called DEXA. It's a dual energy absorptive tomography. The other way is quantitative CT. But the best measurement is actually the trabecular or the cancellous bone. And we do that best peripherally. So while we do get sacral measurements, and you'll see significance, more and more the agreement is coming out that the hip and perhaps the distal radius are the two best areas to look for this. And this is what's kind of become the gold standard, dual energy excitometry absorption. And what we do is we measure the spine. Some studies have been done with quantitative CT, as I mentioned. It can only be used for spinal measurements. The T-score, and this is a measure of bone density, indicating the number of standard deviations by which the patient's bone mass falls above or below the mean peak bone mass for a 30-year-old healthy male. So the standard's a young male, the most clinically relevant value related to risk fracture on the BMD report. And so you'll get a report if you do this. It'll come back a score, normal osteopenic and osteoporosis. And osteoporosis is using negative 2.5 on down. Osteopenia is using negative 1.5 to negative 2.5. These are the recommendations generally that are ongoing at this time. You identify patients with bone loss with a screening bone mineral densitometry. DEXA is most commonly used. If you assure adequate intake, a lot of people prefer 500 milligrams of calcium, vitamin D, regular exercise. And for prostate cancer patients, the T-score is greater than 1. You repeat the DEXA scan after 2 years. If they're osteopenic, you still repeat it 6 to 12 months later. 20% of normal population is osteopenic. However, if it's minus 2.5 or below, people believe treating, and currently, as you know by your office traffic, Zometa tends to be the most popular compound. IV bisphosphonates seem to have the best efficacy. Orals have been poorly absorbed. I definitely can see by the data, and it's done a number of studies, that the bisphosphonates can reverse and improve your bone marrow density. Does it really reduce the fracture rate? We don't know that, and that's kind of the bottom line. It does appear, though, if you're going to buy into this program, that you probably should, if you're going to treat a subset of patients, treat those that have severe osteoporosis with a T-score of minus 2.5 or below. Thank you.
Tom?
Quick question. Mm-hmm. Do you need testosterone in order to take vitamin D and calcium before you see the protective effects on the bone? Because I've always been under the impression that if you were castrate, giving vitamin D and calcium didn't make a whole lot of difference, that you tended to develop osteoporosis anyway. It wasn't protective unless you had normal levels of testosterone. That's purely a question.
And the studies have been done with osteoporosis induced by hormonal ablation, vitamin D and calcium, too little to reverse.
Too little.
Even stop it once it's on the slippery slope, as do the oral bisphosphonates. And the study's been done with IV bisphosphonates, even the orals. They've always given vitamin D and calcium, but there's no good data to even say you need to do that.
Because there's been a number of presentations I've heard where people have said, if you put somebody on hormonal therapy, you now need to put them on vitamin D and calcium, because if they do develop a problem and you haven't put them on it, you will be considered outside the standard of care, which was quite a shock to me, especially when I was unsure if you didn't have testosterone, all you were doing was helping the fish in the first place. So does anybody know?
It's probably right.
It's probably right, but I don't think there's any legal issue that proves that you're benefiting from it.
Matt Smith's
but there's a lot Schmidt of data in the non-androgen deprivation therapy population that it has mostly in women, but also some in men, because this has been studied extensively, that vitamin D and calcium are very effective at least reducing the bone mineral density loss.
In which group?
In aging population.
Right, Paul but Harvey I'm, says I'm talking about a castrate population.
Yeah, I understand that. I understand that. But, I mean, I do think it should be the standard of care, because although we don't have the direct evidence, we have a mountain of evidence in a population that's more or less similar that it's effective, and it's so innocuous and cheap that I think to not do it doesn't make sense.
This week's New England Journal of Medicine has a great article on bone that you should read that goes into a lot of these things. And giving vitamin D and calcium to people may help a little bit, but one, it really doesn't have a big impact. You have to use a bisphosphonate, like Fosamax is approved for men for osteoporosis. But none of the drugs, once you have metastatic disease or have osteoporosis from hormonal therapy, work unless they're the stronger bisphosphonates.
Paul? I'd just like to ask a general question of everybody here. Do you think a DEXA scan is a standard of care before you start androgen deprivation therapy, and periodic follow-up, whether it's 1 year or 2 years?
That was essentially my question, is if you don't do it at baseline, when do you do it?
I don't see the point of the baseline study, because unless you believe you're going to treat prophylactically.
If you had a choice between 1 or 12 months, I would get the 12-month one.
That's basically what I'm saying. I'd do it at a year. Or 18 months.
So you don't do a baseline?
I don't do it, no. Unless the patient smells, like if the patient is frail, then I'd be more inclined to do it, but not
if
routine.
He asked you.
Are people around here then still doing baseline bone scans?
For whom?
For prostate cancer patients at first diagnosis.
Why don't you ask Dr. Scherer that question?
Are you still doing a baseline bone scan? I mean, I know you do. Are used to.
I want an expert from a large
center. You mean 100% of patients?
To answer that question.
They get a bone scan on every new prostate cancer diagnosis.
I want an expert from a major recognized international cancer center to answer that question. Dr. Scherer?
Fortunately, most of them come in with it.
You must be kidding.
That's an easy out.
You must
be
kidding.
What did you say before that? You said that.
No, I mean that. Surely no one is advocating that a favorable risk prostate cancer patient with a low PSA in grade get a bone scan.
He does.
Well, I'm sure he does all kinds of crazy things. You can't justify it.
I wanted to count how many people have seen an osteoporotic fracture in their practice secondary to hormone treatment.
Have you seen an osteoporotic fracture in your practice that you think was from hormone treatment?
Oh, yeah.
I've had at least two. I have one.
No, more than one.
15 years.
Neil? Okay, well, one final comment?
Is anybody worried about the osteonecrosis of the jaw issue that's now starting to surface with not only IV, but the oral Fosamax, too?
Greg? I just reviewed a paper for a journal that cited the incidence at 11%, which is a lot more than the 2 to 3%. And I think we're seeing more and more reports of it, not only just with the IV, but the oral. The at-risk patient seems to be ones that are on chemotherapy, particularly taxotere-related chemotherapy, and have had multiple doses, 15 to 17 doses, puts you at the highest risk.
Doses of Zometa or of chemo? Zometa, yeah.
But they may be the ones who have such a heavy burden of metastatic disease and poor marrow reserve as well, and maybe hard to differentiate.
I mean, everything's a trade-off. You know, you're dying, if you got a drug that's well-tolerated, if it's preventing bone fractures and maybe doing some other things, and you get osteonecrosis of the jaw, you do. But it is something to worry about.
This concludes our program. Special thanks to our speakers, and thank you for listening. This is Dr. Neil Love for this special Think Tank edition of Prostate Cancer Update.